In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Hi there, and welcome into this edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, good to have you along. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and yes, a bit of absurdity. Hoping that you are having an excellent Thursday so far. Whether you're joining us on Facebook Live, I say us, me and the dog, or you're subscribed to the podcast and you are enjoying it through your favorite podcast provider and your favorite device. Good to have you along on this Thursday, the 16th of January, 2020, where if you turn your head the right direction and sniff, you can smell the weekend. It is just around the corner. So, I hope you're having a good day today. I hope all is well with you. And I hope that you and yours are doing well. All of you. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit distracted here. Something doesn't sound right to me, and I'm not really sure why it doesn't sound right to me. And I suspect it is because I made an adjustment of some description, of some kind, and, that's Mike DeMizzi, is that it? That's it. Hold on a second. Hold on to you. Whatever you hold on to, fasten your seatbelt. That's better. I knew it didn't sound right. I was hearing everything. I was hearing all the noise in the background and everything, and okay. A little technical nerdery to start things off. Yesterday, after the show, yesterday afternoon. Wow, I was all over the place yesterday, but when I finally got back to the studio yesterday afternoon, I was working on a project. I have an audio rack that I'm preparing to take down to the studios at Dawson now, and it's back here behind me. You can't see it, no, but it's got voice processing in it. It's got stuff to cover a bunch of microphones, and I was working on it. And in the process, I was looking at the settings on my studio equipment that I have here. And along the way, I switched my DBX 286S out. And if you're into audio gear, you know what that is. It's a voice processor. This is the voice without the voice processor. It is basically like we're sitting around talking, and this is the voice with the processor, which sounds like you're listening to the radio. And because I spent all this time in radio listening to my voice run through a dozen processors and on-air, off-air, in-studio, you know, all this processing, I'm used to hearing it that way. So there we go. Anyway, it was switched off, but now it's switched on. Hey, did you see, changing subjects quickly, did you see all the stuff that happened yesterday as far as the articles of impeachment, the delivery, the signing, the whole nine yards? Did you see what Jerry Nadler said? Jerry Nadler, the Weeble. He's part of that pair, you know, Pencil Neck and the Weeble. It sounds like a really bad 70s cop show. Pencil Neck and the Weeble. I don't know if it's a tall, skinny guy and his dog or what. Anyway, he said this, and I quote, "The Senate is on trial just as much as the president." In other words, if the Senate doesn't ignore the rule of law and join the Democrats in the House going rogue in a purely partisan attack on the president of the United States, they're guilty of something. Most likely they're guilty of not letting the radical loony Democrats have their way. That's probably what he means. Just spitballing here, but I'm thinking that's what he means. So this is what we're dealing with. Jerry Nadler and Pencil Neck and Aunt Nancy and all of these people, they're focused and have been focused since before the inauguration on finding ways to destroy the president who defeated their candidate. Now, I said this yesterday at the end of the podcast. Let me just briefly restate it here. The reason for all of this is because they were counting on Hillary Clinton being elected to office, the first woman president, They were banking on that, and they made that historical pitch to put this hysterical woman in the office, in the Oval Office. Not because she was qualified, because she was eminently not qualified. If you actually look at her record, she has nothing to fall back on. She has a record of failure. She's been a lot of places. To say that she has a record, that she has experience, that she has all of this behind her to support her, is like saying, I am well-traveled because I've been outside of my home state a couple of times. That's crazy. I know I'm not well-traveled. I've been a few places, but I'm not a world traveler. I've been on vacation a few places. I haven't been an explorer of those places. I have done the Clark Griswold at the Grand Canyon in a lot of places. Good. Let's get back. And that's been my experience. Because the kind of vacations we tend to take, you get shuffled to a lot of places and look at a lot of things for a very brief period of time. I'm not well-traveled. I've just been a bunch of places. Not a bunch either, really. And I haven't even traveled out of this hemisphere. I've just been, the Caribbean, off the coast of South America, a few places, but that's about it. Been to California, I've been around a few places in the U.S., but no, I wouldn't dare claim to say that I'm well-traveled. But Hillary Clinton, just because she's held offices, she has occupied offices. And during those times that she held office, specifically the office of Secretary of State, she utilized her position to feather her nest. She used her position to pad the bankroll at the Clinton Family Foundation. And by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, she's working on doing the same thing again, because she was just made chancellor of some college somewhere in the UK. Was it in Ireland? I think it was. She was made a chancellor, and she's going to parlay that into getting more attention and more money going through the Clinton Family Foundation. Just watch. You'll have a lot of trouble finding the articles revealing the truth, but if you dig, you'll find them. That's exactly what's going on. Anyway, they were counting on her being the president and continuing what had been going on for 8 years with Barack Obama. That's what I was saying yesterday. And since they were not able to continue their destruction of the United States of America, or as Barack Obama didn't call it the destruction of the United States of America. No, he called it something completely different. He called it this.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
See, he was intent on transforming something, not restoring something. You don't transform what you love. You restore what you love. You restore things that you care about and you love. You transform something that you see as a base for something different. And this is what the people on the left, the Democrat Party, these socialists, who frankly, if you looked at all of the candidates on the stage at the debate the other night, those people are beyond socialists. Those people are communists. Because they all believe, okay, here's the test. When they were all asked about whether or not they would grant free health care to illegal immigrants and they all raised their hands, bing, the government controlling health care for everyone. The government controlling everything for everyone because the government knows best. That is the core of communism. They make a nice sales pitch and people vote for it to get into it. But then they have to fight to get out of it. That's what all of these people are after. And that's what they hoped to have in Hillary Clinton, a continuation of the destruction of the United States of America that was begun by Barack Hussein Obama, who was lawless. He ignored the law. He governed by fiat. It was a horrible 8 years, a terrible 8 years. And a tiny number of people think it was absolutely wonderful because what? They were able to get health care coverage. that they didn't get before. And when I say tiny number, only 15% of Americans weren't covered. 15%. And the vast majority of those chose not to be covered because they were young and they didn't want to spend the money. Because when you're young, you're going to live forever. You don't need insurance like that. But this is what they thought they were going to have. Another 8 years to transform this nation into their paradise, their progressive paradise. And because they didn't get it, all they've been able to focus on since Donald Trump was elected, before his inauguration, all they've been able to focus on is how to get rid of him. And now, Jerry Nadler says that the Senate would be just as guilty as the president if they didn't vote to impeach him and remove him from office. Whew. So this process started yesterday. Well, it started a long time ago. It started back in 2016. But officially, for the TV cameras and in front of God and everybody, there was a solemn and prayerful signing of the articles of impeachment yesterday. Did you see that? Now, let's put this in proper context. Nancy Pelosi, in her hot pink suit, that's solemn and prayerful, that hot pink suit, sat at a table, smiling and exchanging witticisms with hangers-on around her, and signed with many pens, the articles of impeachment. Pens with her name emblazoned upon them in gold, and then passed the pens out to eager souvenir hounds all around her. This type of signing ceremony is well known in Washington, D.C. You've seen it happen many times. But there is a difference here. The difference is that this kind of ceremony is always done in conjunction with an accomplishment, such as signing into effect a new law. Legislation which is going to do great things, they say, for an oppressed segment of our society. It's always a celebration of accomplishment for the people. Nancy Pelosi, dressed in her hot pink suit and passing out the pens used in the signing, pens emblazoned with her signature in gold, arranged carefully on silver platters, was most certainly not somber or prayerful. She and her cohorts in crime were celebrating the accomplishment of a goal they set before Trump was sworn into office. And then they paraded the articles of impeachment from the House to the Senate. What was it somebody said? It was Dan Bongino, I think, yesterday, who said something like, look at these idiots, it looks like an Adams Family baptism. Bless his heart, he's got it right. This was all political theater. This was political theater at its top rung. Every bit of it. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, handed out those commemorative pens, posed for pictures with them. She said it would be serious, somber, prayerful. It was anything but. Even over at CNN, Dana Bash and the reporter Nia Malika Henderson, they were perplexed by what they were watching. They said it was off message and unusual. They said, we're used to seeing signing ceremonies, handing out pens at moments of celebration when a president is signing legislation, even sometimes on a rare occasion. But it has happened when the House sends over a landmark piece of legislation This is what Dana Bash said. It was unusual to see that kind of ceremony and handing out of the pens and smiling for a picture in this kind of situation, where the House Speaker has bent over backwards to say publicly and privately, this is somber, this is not a time for celebration. Henderson called the signing jarring and said it was a little off message for someone who has tried to set a very serious tone. Pelosi has repeatedly told House Democrats that the impeachment process is not a celebratory moment, calling it somber and a very sad time for our country. Prior to the House impeachment vote last month, she told the Democratic caucus not to cheer at the final vote coming down. And yet, yesterday was a celebration, showing the true colors of the Democrats. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Thursday edition of the show. You can smell the weekend from here. And the Democrats have removed all doubt. You know that old saying? It is better to be silent and have the world around you think you're a fool than to open your mouth and to remove all doubt. Well, the Democrats are opening their mouth. A lot. Nancy Pelosi actually handed out 8 pens to House Democrats last year after signing a continuing resolution to fund the government for 3 weeks. This time, I don't know how many she handed out. We'll have to find that out today. How many she actually handed out. What she's done is to just expose herself and everything they're doing. They were celebrating. This was a landmark decision for the Democrats. Bless her heart. On top of that, yesterday she lied from the House floor about what Trump said during his July 25th phone call to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. She named impeachment managers yesterday morning ahead of the House vote, and she spread more lies about the call with Zelensky. And she actually said, Trump said, do me a favor. Her words were, he could say to the president, do me a favor, do me a favor. What is this, do me a favor? The transcript, which President Trump released several months ago, clearly shows President Trump said, do us a favor. Us. Meaning the country. He didn't say, do me a favor. He said, do us a favor. I know. There are those who will say, well, you're nitpicking. You know what he meant. Yeah, I do know what he meant. He meant, do us a favor. As a nation. As a country. Not him personally for any political reason. Both Pelosi and Schiff have lied about what President Trump said on his call to Zelensky. Schiff previously fabricated Trump's phone call with Zelensky in his opening statement during a congressional hearing. And Schiff again invented fake quotes from President Trump during his Soviet-style show trial, as Alexander Vindman testified. Pencilneck said, what does the president say? I want you to investigate the Bidens and his debunked conspiracy theory pushed by Vladimir Putin that also helps my re-election. He said this as Alexander Vindman was testifying, as quoting President Trump. President Trump said nothing of the sort. But what should we expect from the serial liar Adam Schiff? And Nancy Pelosi as well. And Schiff is now the lead manager in the impeachment trial. Yeah. Pencilneck and the Weeble are 2 of the 7 appointed as managers. Did you know that? Yeah, I've got that lined up here, but coming up. We'll get to that later, hopefully. Pencil Neck, and the Weeble will now be going before the Senate. And remember, the Weeble has already said that if the Senate doesn't agree with the House, then they're guilty, just like the president's guilty. We've already covered that. Oh, boy. This is such a sad state of affairs. It truly is. This once great nation, with the president trying to regain that greatness, and the people trying to drag it into darkness, are kicking and screaming and fighting and pitching a fit like a 2-year-old who doesn't want to go to bed because they can't get their way. These are adults. When adults act like toddlers, you can't take them seriously and you shouldn't. And those who are taking this seriously, even liberals who are taking this seriously, and there are those who are pointing at this and saying it's a joke. What they claim to want, what they claim to be doing, doesn't hold up because of what they're doing. What they have said and what they are doing don't match up. For example, impeachment witness George Washington and George Washington University law press professor Jonathan Turley. Remember that guy? He's speaking out against Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, arguing that she has destroyed the House Democrats' case for impeachment. Just last month, Turley argued in the New York Times that Pelosi failed to convince the American public because she rushed the impeachment process. He says, the problem is that this is the thinnest record of any modern impeachment, as well as arguably the shortest impeachment investigation in history. In a separate article last month, he wrote, journalist Henry Louis Mencken once observed, say what you will about the Ten Commandments, you must always come back to the pleasant fact that there are only 10 of them. Despite unending respect for Mencken, this is an occasion in which I found him mistaken. After I violated the 11th commandment, thou shalt not testify for Republicans. Turley is now turning it up even more by shredding Pelosi's decision to delay sending the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. He wrote in an article titled Pelosi's Blunder, How the House Destroyed Its Own Case for Impeachment, saying, from the outset, the ploy of Pelosi withholding the House impeachment articles was as implausible as it was hypocritical. There was no reason why Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell would make concessions to get an impeachment that he loathed. More importantly, just a couple of days earlier, House leaders insisted that some of us were wrong to encourage them to wait on an impeachment vote to create a more complete record. Pelosi previously insisted that House committees could not pursue direct witnesses like former National Security Advisor John Bolton because there was no time to delay in getting this impeachment to the Senate. She then waited a month and counting to send the articles over to the Senate. He also noted, the fact is that Pelosi played into the hands of McConnell by first rushing this impeachment forward with an incomplete record, and now giving him the excuse to summarily change the rules or even to dismiss the articles. Josh Hammer had this to say in an op-ed from the New York Post. Thorny legal issues aside, Pelosi's gambit lays bare the brazen hypocrisy of the sanctimonious norm worshippers. Most of Trump's purportedly grievous sins pale in comparison to the destructive and destabilizing nature of Pelosi's transmission delay, not to mention the unfair and underhanded nature of the proceedings in her own chamber. The president may not have an explicit constitutional right to a Senate trial, but if Democrats really cared about rule of law and good order, they would have allowed the framers' process to unfold as it was supposed to do. Their delay tactics merely exposed the frivolity of their Trump-induced mass hysteria. So what we're watching on display is Trump derangement syndrome at the congressional level. Nancy Pelosi and her cohorts, her partners in crime, are merely putting on a big, big episode of political theater. And that's all that's happening. As we discussed yesterday, this delay, it was purely political as well. It was just so that the candidates on the Democrat side vying for the candidacy for the Democrat Party could get one more debate under their belts. And now that everything is about to take place, most of them are going to have to come off the road and be in the Senate to do their job as senators during this trial, if it goes forward, if Mitch McConnell allows it to progress. And that's still up for grabs. There's a lot of smoke being blown. There's a lot of talk about witnesses or not witnesses. We'll have to see what happens. Also, coming up after the break, the Weeble has accused the Senate of a disgusting cover-up. And Rand Paul ain't taking none of that. We'll see what he has to say when we come back after the break here as the Daily Perspective continues.
Now you're talking like a man.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. You know, from time to time, while I'm skimming through things online during the breaks, I run across the Just Facts Daily posts that come up on social media. And now and then I like to pass those along to you. Today's is a good one. They're, by the way, their tagline on their site is be informed, not just opinionated. So here's today's question of the day. Which developed nation has the lowest portion of patients who wait more than 4 weeks to see a medical specialist? This is great considering what we're being told by Democrat candidates, okay? They're talking about how they love to use that term, developed nation. This is the only developed nation in the world where this doesn't happen. Well, which developed nation has the lowest portion of patients who wait more than 4 weeks to see a specialist? Is it Canada? Is it France? Is it Sweden? Or is it the USA? Canada, France, Sweden, or the USA? Canada? Eh. France? Eh. Sweden? Eh. USA. Among all developed nations that provide data on medical specialist wait times, the U.S. has the lowest portion of patients who wait more than 4 weeks to see a specialist. The rate in Sweden is 14%. The rate in France is 49%. And the rate in Canada is 56%. The rate in the United States is 5%. Long wait times for health services can cause increased pain and disability, worse medical outcomes, and lost wages. And yet, nations with socialized medicine make their patients wait longer, and more of them wait longer than the United States of America, where our Democrat candidates are telling us we have a serious problem and need to catch up with the rest of the world. It's already better than the rest of the world here. And that's one to remember. I'll try. You know what I need to do? Just while I'm thinking about this, hold on just a minute. Let me grab this link, copy, and paste. Here, let me do this there. Click, click, click. Paste. Ding. Today's show notes. Your link for that is in today's show notes, so you can share it, okay? All right. Now, Back to what I teased before the break. Senator Rand Paul, the Republican from Kentucky, fired back at House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler yesterday because Nadler accused the Senate of engaging in an unconstitutional and disgusting cover-up if it did not permit the introduction of all witnesses in President Donald Trump's upcoming Senate trial. New York Democrat Nadler said, quote, if the Senate doesn't permit the introduction of all relevant witnesses and of all documents that the House wants to introduce, because the House is the prosecutor here, then the Senate is engaging in an unconstitutional and disgusting cover-up. Rand Paul responded. He said this during an interview on Fox News, on Your World with Neil Cavuto, where he highlighted that Democrats don't really want all relevant witnesses called because that means that Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden would be called to testify. He said, well, it's kind of interesting. The comment is that all relevant witnesses, would he agree that Hunter Biden is relevant, that Joe Biden's relevant, and that the whistleblower is relevant? My guess is no. They want all witnesses that they want. And they don't want any witnesses that the president wants. So I say this, either allow all witnesses that the president's defense team deems necessary to their defense, or no witnesses. We're not going to do a kangaroo court like they did in the House. The House only produced witnesses that Adam Schiff agreed to. So, I mean, what kind of kangaroo court is it where only the Democrats get to pick the witnesses and they decide who's relevant? So, no. That's absurd. So I think the Senate will be more fair. I think both Republicans and Democrats want a more fair-minded presentation. But it's not going to be, we're not going to just invite witnesses the Democrats want and say, oh, the president can't invite witnesses that he thinks would help him. There are those who will say, on one hand, that since the charges don't rise to constitutional requirements for impeachment, that the Senate should just receive the articles, examine the articles, and then dismiss the case. I mean, that is fair. You see the articles, you go through the formality, but nothing rises to the constitutional requirement of impeachment. There's nothing there. There is no there. They should just dismiss it. And on the other hand, there are those who say, okay, game on. Let's call witnesses. Let's call all of them. Let's call the people the Republicans tried to call during the House clown and pony show. Let's call all of these witnesses that Pencilneck wouldn't let us bring forward. Let's call all of them. Because when you call all of them, you bury the Democrats and you expose their crime for what it actually is. And yes, I said crime. Because there is crime going on in D.C. There are people who are using their office to make millions of dollars for themselves and their families. They're parlaying their relationships, their positions, into lots and lots of money. That's one reason someone who is almost 80 years of age is right now Speaker of the House and worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. That money just keeps rolling in, and in the family, you know, that money rolls downhill. You set up inheritances, you set up funds, you set up blessings for those generations which come behind you. That's one reason people don't retire. I wholeheartedly suspect that another reason they don't retire is because they owe people favors. Because favors were done for them. And that they've made promises. Big promises to big donors, to big supporters who manage networks of people who funnel money into campaign coffers. They've made promises. And those promises don't happen overnight. They make promises like, yeah, we're going to pass that legislation so that your business can thrive, or we're going to pass that legislation so that your competition has no chance of beating you. We're going to pass that legislation so that you will be much better off than you are now. We'd like your support. And they know that just passing the legislation in the House doesn't mean it's going to happen. They have to have control of the Senate, and they have to have control of the White House. But they make promises, and they have to stay around until they can set the stage to fulfill those promises. Because if they retire without fulfilling those promises, in some cases, and I'm not just kidding here, some of these politicians might wake up with the fish. They're playing with dirty people to do dirty jobs, dirty deeds. And that's why they stay for as long as they do. That's my suspicion. That's my gut. Now, Rand Paul is also, he also has something to say to the Republicans. He's waging a fierce campaign to prevent the Senate from hearing witnesses in Donald Trump's impeachment trial. He's vowing to force tough votes on his fellow Republicans if they break with the president or back Democrats' demands for new evidence. He's occasionally at odds with Trump from his killing of Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani to his national emergency to build his southern border wall. But when it comes to impeachment, Paul is taking the hardest line possible in Trump's favor. He says if four or more of his GOP colleagues join with Democrats to entertain new witness testimony, he'll make the Senate vote on subpoenaing the president's preferred witnesses, including Hunter Biden and the whistleblower who revealed the Ukraine scandal. Polarizing picks who moderate Republicans aren't eager to call. By the way, when I say moderate Republicans and he mentions four, the number four, you get a mental image of who these people are, don't you? Of course you do. These are Republicans who vote with Democrats on a regular basis. He said, if you vote against Hunter Biden, you're voting to lose your election, basically. Seriously, that's what it is. If you don't want to vote and you think you're going to have to vote against Hunter Biden, you should just vote against witnesses, period. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has warned Republicans not to divide the party or endanger his slim GOP majority. But Paul's play could be useful to him. If the pressure campaign stifles the small group of Republicans open to hearing from witnesses like former National Security Advisor John Bolton, McConnell will be able to conclude the trial in the swift fashion he has long sought. But if a majority of the Senate agrees to hear witnesses, Paul is ready to go all out to make sure everyone in the Senate is on the record about whether they stand with Trump. He says, my first preference would be to be done with it as soon as possible and not to have any witnesses. If they insist on having people like Bolton coming forward, my insistence will be not just one witness, but that the president should be able to call any witness that he deems necessary to his defense. Paul's threat is backed up by real power under the process envisioned by McConnell and allowed under Senate rules. So Rand Paul is not taking any nonsense here. Not from the Weeble, not from Pencil Neck, and not from these limp-wristed Republicans who side with Democrats. He's saying, this is ludicrous. We should do what we have to do and get this done and get it over with as quickly as possible. But if you insist on witnesses, you're not just getting a few witnesses. You better be voting for everyone the president wants. And let's really bury the Democrats and bury them good. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Thursday edition. Looking forward to the weekend and hoping you have great plans for your weekend. I hope the plans are to unplug, get some quiet time. That's something I haven't talked about in a while, is quiet time. Spend some time with the family. That's definitely not quiet time. Enjoy some time with friends if you can. That's not quiet time. But you need to have some time in the quiet. I think most of the problems that we have today, speaking about society, about people in general, I think most of them are because people refuse to be alone with themselves. Because people don't like what they hear. I'll just let you chew on that for a minute. It's kind of a dreary day in our neighborhood, and I hope things look a bit better for you. We've got a little bit of rain by, when is it? Let's see, it's the 16th, by the middle or so of next week. Going to be cold here, and I guess that means I need to get some more firewood. Oh, well. But that's my life. Let's get back to what's happening as far as things in Washington, D.C. are concerned. The dog and pony show that is this impeachment. The pink pantsuit, gold engraved pens impeachment. The celebration that happened yesterday that was supposed to be a somber event. As part of what happened yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, appointed 7 impeachment managers. She selected these 7 people. Did you know that 6 of them supported the impeachment of President Donald Trump before the whistleblower complaint was filed? Pencil neck, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff is set to be the lead manager. Other managers include House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald the Weebler Nadler. The Weeble Nadler. House Democratic Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries. Democratic Colorado Representative Jason Crow. Democratic Florida Representative Val Demings. Democratic Texas Representative Sylvia Garcia. And Democratic California Representative Zoe Lofgren. Of those 7, there are 6 who publicly supported impeaching the president before the whistleblower complaint regarding the president's phone call with the president of Ukraine, specifically whether Trump asked him to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden in exchange for U.S. military aid was filed. As a side note, we now know that that is not what happened. We know that there was no exchange. There was no quid pro quo. Impeachment witness after impeachment witness substantiated that. Let's look at what each of them has to offer. This is for Crow on July 30th. Before the whistleblower complaint was filed, or there was any public knowledge about the president's call with Ukraine, Crow wrote a post for Medium saying, quote, "Most must complete the work started by Special Counsel Robert Mueller," and that there should be an impeachment inquiry to Trump. Demings said as early as April, after the Mueller report, that she wanted to impeach Trump, quote, "We're struggling to justify why we aren't beginning impeachment proceedings." She said that according to Politico. On her first chance to vote on impeachment, Garcia voted against tabling a resolution on impeachment. The vote took place on July 17th. The resolution was titled Impeaching Donald John Trump, President of the United States of High Misdemeanors. Jeffries voted against tabling an impeachment resolution offered by Texas Democratic Representative Al Green in January of 2018. Lofgren also voted against tabling Green's impeachment resolution on July 17th. Also, like Nadler, she's denounced partisan impeachment, saying that in 1998, we're moving forward on impeachment on a partisan basis, and that will do damage to our country. That, of course, in reference to the Clinton impeachment, who, may I remind you, actually committed a crime by lying to Congress, who actually had 11 charges against him, real charges against him, That was a real impeachment. And the Democrats were fighting a real impeachment back then. The Weeble, back in June, weeks before Trump's phone call with Ukraine, was pushing to open an impeachment inquiry. This is according to CNN. Nadler also reportedly campaigned to become the House Judiciary Chairman by saying he would be best to lead impeachment against the president, according to the New York Times. Also back in 1998, in the Clinton impeachment, Nadler said that impeaching the president of the United States is an undoing of a national election, despite his continued calls to impeach Trump. Democrats voted to impeach Trump over the ongoing scandal regarding the president's phone call with the president of Ukraine. The House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight Committees all investigated Trump, his cabinet members, and closest allies. The seven impeachment managers' roles are very much like the roles of prosecutors, as the members are responsible for presenting the impeachment inquiries to the Senate to make the case as to why Trump should be impeached with the evidence they have gathered. Pelosi continued to hold the articles of impeachment, saying she doesn't think the Republican-led Senate would hold a trial that both sides can agree on. That's what she was saying. She kept using that term, a fair trial. The interpretation of that word fair in this light is a trial which abandons the rule of law and goes rogue like the House Democrats did. That's what she was talking about. This is a crazy, crazy situation. But I have a feeling we're going to see even deeper and weirder craziness in the days to come. Now, the Senate will vote to acquit President Donald Trump on the charges alleged in the articles of impeachment against him rather than dismiss the case, and that will be a much better outcome for him, according to Senator Ted Cruz. He said this Tuesday. Quote, the reason why this ends with an acquittal is very simple. They haven't met the constitutional threshold. The Constitution specifies for the impeachment of a president that you have to demonstrate bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. They haven't even alleged the president has a speeding ticket. Cruz says he believes the Senate has decided to allow both sides to present their cases in the exact same way the indictment of former President Bill Clinton took place. He says, in other words, it'll start with the opening arguments from the House managers. They'll get a full and fair opportunity to present their case, and then it'll move to the opening arguments from the White House defense team. Then the case will move to the senators, and the process won't be orderly, he says. Quote, senators have to write down our questions. We submit our questions in writing, and the Chief Justice will ask the questions for us. At that point, then, the debates will happen about whether or not to dismiss the case or to vote a final verdict, then or take up witnesses. I expect a contentious debate decision probably about 2 weeks from now. Meanwhile, the Senate trial will guarantee Trump a chance to defend himself, says Cruz. He says, the president has a legal team. It is led by the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone. They will be able to present opening arguments. They will be able to present evidence. They will be able to call witnesses if they choose. One of the important things to remember, it's not the Senate that chooses to call witnesses. It's the prosecution or the defense. This dog and pony show will continue to play out over the next few weeks. And hopefully, I say hopefully, sanity will prevail. But then again, when has sanity ever prevailed in Washington, D.C.? We watched 8 years of insanity unfold. And maybe you were like me while that 8 years was going by. You kept watching the news with your eyebrows knitted together, sometimes saying out loud, how can they do this? And then we learned how they can do it is by ignoring the Constitution. How they can do it is by thumbing their nose at the rule of law, all the while using that term, the rule of law, as though they are following the rule of law. And if you were like me, you got the definite sense that you were watching con artists at work. And that's why I began calling them criminals. Actually, I've called them criminals since before Obama, but I've sensed for a long, long time that life in Washington, D.C. is a joke. Life in Washington, D.C. is just based on what I've been able to see. Obi-Wan Kenobi had it right.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
I think that's an accurate description of politically motivated, politically moved Washington, D.C. It is a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Lots of parties, lots of drinking, lots of hobnobbing, lots of networking, lots of connections, lots of promises, handshakes, backslapping, good old boys and gals playing the political game and really not getting anything accomplished. Just look at the past couple of years in the House. They've been solely focused on impeaching a president. Sure, they've passed bills, all voted on one-sidedly by the Democrats, which they know can't get passed. They send them over to the Senate, where Mitch McConnell says, yeah, this is just a graveyard for the bills coming from the House. And his reasoning is not because he's being unfair or just not considering things. He says that because he knows that it's like a bunch of angry toddlers making demands on the Senate to pass legislation based in fantasy. Nothing they're asking for is constitutional, and he's got to say, no, that's not happening. Because somebody has to be the adult and keep the toddlers from destroying the house. They don't like it. They pitch a fit. And yesterday, we saw them celebrating this two-year-long fit, almost three-year-long fit. And it will continue. And we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.